everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name is Ben Jackson, and once again, I'll be your host. Unfortunately, illness has struck Joris down this week, so it's just me and Scott. Scott, how are you doing this evening?
I'm really good, Ben. Hope everyone else is well too. I see you are wearing your Cercle Brugge top this evening. Would that be to celebrate Big Miron Muzlic's confirmation of his new contract? I, for those of you who can see a little bit, are wearing a Belgian FA tracksuit top, which may or may not to be celebrating a rather good draw for the national team.
Yeah, I was going to say, you celebrating the the kind of, I don't want to call it a cushy draw, but I feel like it's pretty cushy. Obviously, yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, I think it's Romania and Slovakia joining in Group E, and then it's the winners of Path B, which you've got Israel, Iceland, Bosnia and Herzegovina, and then Ukraine. Obviously, out of those three teams, Ukraine are probably the ones you fear the most. They've got very, very good players. They usually make it to a tournament like this. So you'd presume it's going to be Ukraine, especially with everything that's going on there. You feel like that team is probably destined. And if we're talking about who, like, controversial football and stuff like that, they probably should be there anyway, after what happened in that Italy game. But I'm sure our friends in certain Ukrainian podcasts around the world are nodding along to that at the moment. But yeah, it looks like a decent draw. Even if they do get Ukraine, you think they probably should win that group. And yeah, maybe I'm celebrating Miron's new contract. Last week it was the Mechelen top after they won. I was thinking I'll wear the Cercle one. Maybe they'll beat Union. But unfortunately, even my kind of attempted a lucky shirt didn't really work. Union just too good. So let's quickly run through the results then from the weekend. Anderlecht, they got off to a good start on Friday night. They beat Westerlo 3-1. Molenbeek and Charleroi played out a pretty drab 0-0 draw. Erpen drew 1-1 with Kortrijk. A dramatic late goal from an unlikely suspect in that one. Antwerp only beat Leuven 1-0, but should have been a lot more. Genk, they drew 2-2 with Ghent. This is probably why Joris is feeling sick because of what happened at the end of that one. Mechelen lost in the snow to a St. Truiden side that were wearing all white. There's plenty to talk about there. Club Bruges, they've had a very, very good week. They beat Standard Liège 2-0. Then Union Saint-Gilloise beat Cercle Bruges 2-1 to round out the weekend. So let's start with Anderlecht travelling to Westerlo on Friday evening. It was a story of the three Ds, three Danes as well. Anders Dreyer got another goal for the season within the first 20 minutes to make it 1-0. That's how it stayed until the second half, and Thomas Delaney made it 2. Then Kasper Dolberg finished it off with a lovely counter-attacking move. That's his 10th goal for the season. His first time in double figures, Scott, since the 2019-2020 season. That was his first season at Nice, I believe. So it looks like he's getting back to some form. Benito Raman even started. I mean, you can tell that this is all going a bit crazy. Maris Stoykens with 2 assists. Kylian Sardella with another assist. Westerlo did get one back late in the game. Boss scoring with a Griffin Niao assist. I know we kind of gave Griffin Niao a little bit of a hard time last weekend with his free kick. But I have to say, since he's come into the side, he's probably been Westerlo's best player over the last couple of weekends. So yeah, fans of the US men's national team will certainly be happy to see that. Unfortunately, that defeat meant the end for Jonas de Lok. He was appointed 2021, got them promoted. Really, really good season last year. But I think they tried, didn't they, Scott? They've tried to keep going with him. And we even said, just don't get rid of him because we think he could be able to turn it around. But when you look at it, 2 wins in 16, they were always going to have to kind of give a deadline or a cutoff. And I think from the outside looking in, people may be like, oh, it's a bit unfair. Anderlecht second in the league. They probably were going to lose this game. But I think they have to look at kind of the wider picture, and the two sides have come together and agreed that, yeah, it's time to part ways. A couple of names being mentioned. Rick DeMille. People remember him. He took over from that incredible Scott Parker performance. played with Club Rouge under Ronnie Dyler, but he's been linked. But they're also looking for someone with a little bit more relegation experience. So, yeah, big win for Anderlecht. Tough loss for Westerlo. Tough for Jonas de Rok. But, the football keeps moving, I guess.
Yeah, it was a pretty dominant Anderlecht performance, I thought, Ben. I mean, 3-0 could easily have been 5 or 6, really. Some of the chances they missed in that game are unbelievable. Westerlo were really poor. I mean, we know they've been struggling for a while, but I thought this week those little passages in games recently where they've played reasonably okay just eluded them this weekend. It was just the tank was kind of completely empty, and they were really steamrolled. Anderlecht totally dominant. As I was saying, should have won by more. Jonas de Rock's departure, while not surprising, perhaps it's surprising that it's come now. I think we felt, didn't we? We were talking about it recently, that maybe it'd be a January thing if they were going to make the change, but they've decided to go now. And when you look at the numbers, it isn't really surprising. I mean, they've only won twice this season, but when you add that to the end of last season, and last season they probably overachieved, although the end of their season was pretty poor. When you add that to the two wins this season, they've only won 3 in 26, losing 14 of those, which is, you know, by anybody's criteria, stinking form. And to be fair, I think the club were really, really good with Jonas. Actually, they stuck with him when they could have pushed the eject button earlier than they did. And I think they probably just think, well, you know, especially after this weekend's performance, which was really, really poor, that, you know, it was time to go now. I think, you know, when people look back in it, though, they will have quite fond memories of Jonas de Rock. Obviously, he brought them back up. They probably overachieved slightly last year. The second season is always more difficult. And we have to bear in mind as well, I was looking today at who they lost in the summer. They lost some important players who were really central to everything that they did well last year. Maxim de Kuyper's obviously gone back to club. That was always going to be happening anyway. He was massive for them. But the other one that sticks out for me like a sore thumb is Dorgelés Nené. Losing him's a big one. He scored 13 last year. And he's a massive loss as well. Veto Kelly is a reasonably big loss as well. Obviously, he's gone to Lommel, not done as well there as he would have hoped, but they've lost some players who really did quite well there last year as well. And I think just the chemistry around the club has obviously suffered a little bit, which is difficult. And then from the owner's perspective, here's the really tricky bit, and this might be what led to the decision. Westerlo spent more this summer, round about 16 million, than they've spent in their entire history combined over transfer windows. That's the context we're operating in now. And as we were saying weeks ago, Westerlo are the second biggest spenders, pretty much. So, you know, when you look at it like that, the owners have probably went, well, okay, you know, we've done our bit, we've invested, and the results aren't coming now, so maybe we just have to make the change. So it's understandable. Anderlecht, on the other hand, unbeaten in six now. Probably should have been more than that, but for a bit of bad luck. And I'm just going to throw this question out there to listeners. They can answer it for us in the meantime. At what point do we take Anderlecht seriously this season?
I mean, I think we've got to. Like, we were chatting, weren't we, just before, that we see them as pretty much title contenders now. I think after 16 games, the table doesn't really lie. You are where you are on merit. And it's mad when you think that they've literally got two recognised central defenders and they somehow managed to survive and be second, when one of them is Jan Vertonghen, who's just like being wheeled out every week, still playing at a very high level. But you just think, when's he going to... surely he's going to get crocked at some point. So I think for them, January is a... If they can get some decent centre-backs in, they've been linked with some good ones. One of your boys at Celtic, they've been linked with recently. Cool. A couple of guys in Sweden as well. We know Fredberg's probably on the phone, and he's probably been on the phone since the end of the last window. So I think they probably will get... It'll probably be Danish as well, let's be honest. Like, they're just grabbing loads of Danish players at the moment. on Veselo, it's just... I think when you look at their kind of transfer policy this summer, it's been very much looking towards the future, which is no problem with. They've signed very exciting young players like Frigan, Stassin, and then a couple of others as well. But you've got to kind of balance that out. And you can tell that they then rushed out. They got Sidorchuk, Haspalat, like a couple more like players that have know-how of the league, or not the league, but like more experience. Especially Sidorchuk, like he's played at some of the highest levels of European football during his time in the Ukrainian football. So I don't know, I think you're right. I think you hit the nail on the head, Scott. I think it's the chemistry. I think that was where all they went wrong. And I think De Rock had like the system and everything in place last season. It's just the new players maybe haven't really fit that this season. He's changed stuff around quite a lot. and he's changed his formations around. So you can't say he hasn't tried. It just hasn't worked out. So I don't know, I'm fully expecting within the next couple of days that Yves van der Haag is going to be wheeled out at Vesselo to do another relegation battle job. The poor man's just been sacked from Saudi Arabia, fortunately as well. Like, if you look at the record, he was actually doing a decent job over there, but he got sacked. So it's just a short termism, I guess, in Middle Eastern football that you see quite a lot. But yeah, he said I think he said he doesn't really want to take another Belgian job, but I'm sure they can convince him. So that's who I think will come in. I see Rick de Mille as not the answer to the questions that they're asking. But it's interesting that his name's on the list, and maybe it's an Eve till the end of the season, then they get Rick in to start building stuff. But yeah, it's a shame for Duroc, but I don't think we've seen the end of him in the Pro League. I think he'll be back, and I think, yeah, he'll do a decent job somewhere. Another two sides that are kind of like Vesselo have been a bit disappointing this season. Well, maybe that's a bit harsh on Molenbeek, but Molenbeek against Charleroi, yeah, 0-0. This one finished a lot of huffing and puffing, I guess we could say, in this one, but not a lot of kind of quality at the end of it, which just kind of, yeah, I guess kind of sums these sides up. I think every time I watch Molenbeek, I'm just thinking if they had Biron up front with Gay, I think it would be a lot better. I just don't think Gay on his own is like the striker that the system like wants to play. That they want to play as. I think Kapaka would be a lot better with having those guys up front together. And you look at Charleroi, and it's just, yeah, I think Mazu's, he's just searching for like some sort of combination of players and something to do stuff. I think best player probably in this game was Herve Koffi. He made four saves, but I can't remember them being that difficult. Ilham Alicha as well had a decent game in the midfield, just looking at the stats and stuff. I did actually watch this game, but I literally can't remember anything happening in it of note. but I don't know, Scott, like kind of looking ahead, I guess, to January for both these teams, you expect them to be quite active, especially Molenbeek. I don't think Tex is going to sit on his laurels at all. I think he's going to have to go out because he has made some decisions in the summer that means they have to stay up this season, the way he's acted. For Charleroi as well, it's kind of like they've made some of the signings they've made have been all right, but they haven't really like kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of the striker, and that's been their problem. But then you've got some decent players in there, like Dragsnes. I think he's been a really good signing, but outside of that, it's been a bit hit and miss. So yeah, expecting these two sides to be a lot more active in the transfer window, I guess.
Yeah, I think as far as this game is concerned, there's very little we can say about it. Looking at both clubs kind of strategically, I think they both need to add a little bit, particularly Charleroi, who up till now have had a very underwhelming season. I expected them to, and I've said this a few times before, to be doing a little bit better than they are at the moment. And they just, it's a kind of stuttering engine. That's what it sort of feels like. Just when you feel like they might be turning a corner, then, you know, the tank runs empty again. It's kind of a strange one. And I think, you know, Felice is obviously tinkering a little bit to try and find something, a system that works for everybody. And like you say, you know, Herve Koffi being probably the best player in the game says it all. Molenbeek will take the point all day long, though, I think. As long as they're picking up points, they will be happy. But again, I think, you know, they probably need to add a little bit more in January. Obviously, they've got longer term, they've got Kylian Hazard to come back. Nobody's quite sure where he's at in his recovery yet. But, I mean, he's potentially a very big player for them longer term as well. And was always going to be one of their big players going into this season before his injury kind of took him out of it. But they're managing to kind of tick along okay-ish, as we've been saying for kind of weeks now, and pick up another point. I thought Charleroi were marginally the better side, so they'll probably go away slightly disappointed that they didn't edge it. But, you know, they'll take a draw rather than losing it, that's for sure.
Yeah, just the stuttering Charleroi is just such a nice kind of way of describing them, isn't it? It's not the Mazu ball that we saw at Union during that first season back, is it? It's not that level of fun. It's just not fun to watch at the moment. I think that is because he hasn't got that dynamism up front that he quite likes to have. But yeah, is what it is. It's a 0-0. It's one we won't remember in a couple of days, probably. Completely forgot about it for this weekend anyway. One game we probably will remember for a long time this season is Erpen against Kortrijk, and that's only for one reason, really. 0-0 in the first half. From my recollection of this one, there was a lot of Christian Malinov just trying to score screamers and just scything it completely wide every single time. And I was just like, mate, come on. You tried once, it's gone terribly wrong. Like, I know Devok has said we don't have the quality up front, but that is probably not what he was asking for. Devok, yeah, he's still shifting things around. El Adrisi started up front, was pretty kind of non-existent. With Malinov, at least he could move Kadri into those more kind of forward positions, and he definitely got on the ball a lot more. I thought Ojo was quite exciting, kind of direct running. For Erpen, I don't know, I'm fast thinking their best player is probably Victor Paulsen. I think he's just, without him, that defence is just all over the place easily. So it's not great, I guess, if your best player is a defender when you're trying to stay in the league, because they just really don't have much up front. Nuhu didn't really do much. Who else? Finn Bogason. He's all right. He's still, you can tell, like when you watch him, you know he knows what he needs to do and knows where he needs to be, and he's got that footballing intelligence, but the quality behind him is just not kind of good enough to get there. They did actually take the lead, though, from a set piece. Victor Paulsen, as I said, he did manage to turn it in, much to the frustration of the entire Kortrijk kind of squad, seeing that one go into the back of the net. Kortrijk kept pushing. Erpen very happy to sit and say, go on and try and break us down. We don't think you've got the quality to do that. And they didn't really have the quality to do that. Debuk sent on Davis, Meaton, Avanati. He was just chucking them all at this point. Got to the 91st minute, I think. And this is the first incident we see Tom Vandenberg coming up for a corner. Get something on it, but it doesn't go in. And you're like, well, hang on. They found someone here. Like, there's Erpen don't know how to deal with Tom Vandenberg coming up from the back. Send the keeper up again in the 92nd minute. He gets a header. It dribbles over the line to make it 1-1. He's now, yeah, scored more goals probably than some of the Kortrijk strikers. It's always amazing when you see a goalkeeper score. And I think he said after the game he would have taken his top off, but it was just far too cold to do that. He was like, nah, too cold. But to be fair, he didn't even go that quick. He was celebrating, but he was like running back because he was like, oh, we probably should try and sneak a win here. Unfortunately, neither side could sneak a win, and it's pretty much Kortrijk will take it in the sense of like they rescued a draw late on, but it doesn't really help them that like, they've finally reached double figures. But the gap to Erpen in fourth and bottom is 15 points. Gap to Charleroi into safety basically is 17, so they've still got quite a long way to go. Scott, I guess on paper, both teams would have been eyeing this game as we need to get 3 points, and in the end, neither did.
Well, it was a veritable relegation six-pointer, wasn't it? It was, you know, I said this to you guys before the game started. I said, are you ready for this six-pointer? I thought Erpen were marginally better, but, you know, considering they've got the joint worst defensive record, you just knew they were never going to be able to hold on. Even when they scored, I thought, I just can't see it. And sure enough, they couldn't. What I didn't foresee was it being Tom Vandenberg who scored the equaliser, 94th minute. That makes him actually the ninth goalkeeper to score in the Pro League this century and the first since 2014-15 to attempt two shots on target, which I thought was an amazing stat. And, you know, as you were saying, he really, really enjoyed himself. I saw lots of fans afterwards getting selfies with him after the game. So he was obviously doing a lap of the Kerweg with anyone who wanted a photograph for a private collector's item. But yeah, I mean, it just felt, because defensively how poor both they were, that Erpen were never going to be able to hold on. And it's a result that doesn't really do anybody any good. I was looking at it thinking, if Erpen can hold out here, this could be a bit of a game changer, because it would certainly put a bit of daylight between them and the teams below them. But it's nothing of the sort. So pretty frustrating for both coaches at the end. And, you know, the equaliser, there's something quite funny about it. He makes good contact with it, Vandenberg, but it's the way it kind of trickles in slow motion across the six-yard box into the corner. And you can see the Erpen defences, the heads just go down like they can't believe it. they absolutely can't believe it. And I don't blame them because they're low on confidence as well anyway. So that's you know, another dagger to the heart, right to the death. But they weren't the only side this weekend to suffer a dagger to the heart right to the death.
We can get away with that when Joris isn't here.
No, and we can pay for it later.
Yeah, no, exactly. But it's just like, what? Have we given up on putting people on the goal line, on the post now at corners? Like, that used to be Sunday League, like 101, put people on the post, because the keeper would miss it and it would probably loop all the way over his head and go into the back of the net. But you see, if you had a man on the post, I can't remember the goal, but I'm pretty sure there wasn't someone on the post. And if there was, he did a pretty terrible job because he just would hoofed it clear. But yeah, it means Urban, I guess they're the only side within that bottom four that didn't lose any ground or lose any points in terms of the sides above them. Like, they're still only 2 points away from safety in Charleroi. Like, that's how poor Charleroi's season has been at the moment. So yeah, let's move on to let's go to Antwerp now for the Saturday night game. They face another one of those teams in the relegation struggle, which are Leuven. Once again, Brad Bruins on the bench, Maziz on the bench as well. So slightly more defensive looking Leuven for this one. And Antwerp were more than happy to have the ball. They were more than happy to go at them. I said to you guys, we definitely agreed. Chidera Aduke, this was his best game I've seen him play for Antwerp. I thought he was absolutely fantastic. It felt, for those who can remember his little time, he had like one really, really good season at CSKA in Moscow before the war and all that sort of stuff, the invasion or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, so before then, he was really, really good. He's since kind of struggled. He went to Hertha Berlin and was pretty rubbish. But yeah, that game, I thought he was really, really good. Him and Vindal as well, they were linking up really, really nicely. But his kind of just wasn't able to get the assist or the goal that his play really, really did deserve. But he didn't stop trying. And I think the Antwerp fans really did appreciate his performance. And I've seen people say, yeah, maybe they finally found like another winger to replace my good friend Muya, who, yeah, as people know, I'm not overly convinced by at the moment. But it wasn't Aduke, it was Balakwisha who gave the side the lead. Really, really nice move. Balakwisha picking up from the left, cutting inside far too easily. 1-2 with Janssen, frees him up completely, and he sides it past Leysen into the net. Second half, it looked like Antwerp made it 2 when Leysen just let the ball go through his legs from across to the back stick. Ekelenkamp, I was like, you've got to pull it back, you've got to put it back, and he just backheeled it in with a ridiculously good finish. Unfortunately, there was an offside in the build-up, so it didn't count, but it would have been a really, really nice goal. Leuven did, at the end of the game, get a bit more momentum and start trying to push for that equaliser, but they just didn't really have enough to get past Boutte, Koulibaly, Alderweireld. And Scott, I don't know if you saw this, but so Koulibaly's loan deal had like a kind of, the way it was financed was like, the more he plays, the less it's going to cost Antwerp. And I think after 10 games, that's when it starts to kick in. So if I read it right, I think it was Het Nieuwsblad was saying, basically, the way he's playing, it could end up that it's almost free by the end of the season, which is ridiculous because this guy is clearly a very, very good player and very, very good defender. But I think Dortmund just didn't expect him to play as much as he did. Mm. Whereas he's now easily first choice. He's the Pacho replacement in this defence at the moment. So, yeah. Ridiculously good loan deal for them. Not sure if they're going to be able to make it permanent at the end of the season. I don't think there's a clause or anything like that, but it'll be one of those ones that they wish they could sign again because he's just been fantastic this season. But a good win for Antwerp. I think on reflection, they probably should have scored four or five in this one, but they move into the top six. Leuven remain 5 points adrift of safety.
Yeah, I thought it was a deserved home win. I actually really liked Michel-Ange Balakwisha's goal. Really lovely 1-2. Great curve on the finish as well. Just really neat. I mean, you see goals like that kind of quite often. It's almost a classic move, that one at the edge of the box. But a really lovely goal. And he's actually having a decent season. I think he's got something like 5-14 or something like that, Balakwisha now. So you know he's not doing too bad for them. I think Antwerp will be delighted to be up to fourth. Getting a couple of wins under their belt recently. They're right back in the kind of playoff contention, and they've narrowed that gap kind of slightly. So, you know, Mark Van Bommel will be really delighted with their kind of recent progress, because as we know, because of the playoffs, as long as you're in there, then, you know, you're in with a chance. And they were looking like they were really going off the boil for a little while. So they're, you know, they're at home as well, difficult to break down, as Levin found out. Three defeats for Oscar Garcia in his opening three games at 11. Not entirely unexpected, really. Little signs last week, I was saying that, you know, the body language looks a little bit better, so they're feeling a bit better about themselves, and obviously responding to the manager and his new coaching staff on some level. But obviously, that the big thing they're looking for is that first win, because that can make a massive difference. Not come so far. Looking at their fixtures coming up, they've got St. Truiden away, Circle at home, and then Ghent away before Christmas. So I'm not sure where the points are going to come there. Maybe they're looking at going to the Daewoo Wasabi Steyr to play St. Truiden, and hoping that might be their first win. But that's not a tricky, an easy game for them at the moment, with the way St. Truiden are playing, you know, a lot of decent football. So it's getting that first win that's going to be big for them. They're still looking a little bit better, but yeah, Antwerp could have won this and should have won it by a lot more than they did, up to fourth, as I was saying. And from their point of view, then they're making reasonable progress recently.
Yeah, no, they definitely are, for sure. Unfortunately, it comes off the back of another defeat in the Champions League. 1-0 defeat to Shakhtar Donetsk, and they knew you got sent off in the 97th minute. It means they're literally staring. They can't qualify, obviously, for the next stage. But they also are in danger of not picking up any points. Marvin Bourne was like, "Yeah, we can beat Barcelona." Okay, fair enough. If you think they can. So it's been a bit of a rude awakening, I guess, the European adventure for Antwerp, which is a shame because, yeah, they were so deserving of being there with winning the league and stuff, and then to have kind of a pretty drab group stage. But they came up against three teams with ridiculously good amounts of European Champions League football kind of experience. Like Shakhtar are usually there, Porto are very, very good in European football, like Portuguese clubs are always very good, Barcelona have obviously been there, done that, so it was always going to be a tough ask, but I think they'll be better for it the next time they go into European football. So it's a shame, but it is what it is. This is kind of the level that you're fighting to get to, and yeah, I'm sure next time they'll come a little bit more prepared and with less naivety, because there's plenty of games they should have beaten Shakhtar at home. They probably could have beaten Porto at home if they'd really kind of stuck it out. But Barcelona at home, that'd be a nice kind of end one to have, because it would be a big game, there'd be a great crowd, and hopefully they can at least pick up a point or a win to finish that one off.
It'd be really nice if they could do that. I want to defend Antwerp just a wee bit, actually, just more for listeners, because in recent weeks, particularly around the European games, there's been a lot of criticism on social media about the kind of how poor they've been in Europe. And I think what we all know is they have earned the right to play at this level, but the gap in quality between, you know, Antwerp's squad and the sides they've been playing is massive. But there's no shame in that, because there's lots of other sides that, you know, can't really lay a glove on elite sides at that level. So they're no worse than anybody else. There's plenty of other sides that the report card looks, you know, more or less the same. And, you know, as you're saying, Ben, I think this will make the squad and the players better. And you know, you have to enjoy these things, because they don't come along very often. And you know, there's likely at the moment, it looks like there's going to be another side in a similar position to them. So, you know, the boot's going to be in the other foot in a few months probably. But yeah, I mean, we just know that, you know, they're going to find it very difficult to kind of compete at that level. And hopefully, yeah, they can sign off, you know, with a decent result in their final group game.
Yeah, absolutely, that would be ideal, a nice way to end kind of a little European adventure, I guess. Let's go to Sunday's games, which started with every Englishman's favourite game, Genk v Ghent. turning up in wrong places probably for this one. We didn't have the situation where the VAR man went to the wrong place like he did last season. That was very comical. Ghent coming into this one off a nice comfortable 4-1 win over Zorya Luhansk in the Europa Conference League. So they're through. If I've remember my maths correctly, or pretty much through to the next stage. Genk, on the other hand, took the lead against Fiorentina. Ridiculously good goal from Joris Kempe. Like, incredible goal from Joris Kempe. Not a screamer from outside the box, but his movement and run was fantastic. They didn't even hold the lead until the end of the first half, even though they scored in the 45th minute. Lucas Martinez Cotala made it 1-1 from a corner. And then Nicolas Gonzalez scored from a penalty that was, yeah, dubious, I guess you could say. That made it 2-1 to Fiorentina. And Genk, yeah, they're going to struggle to qualify. They need results to go their way, and they need to do some decent stuff, I think. Or they might be out already. Let me just check the table. But I'm pretty sure they still have a chance. Yeah, they've still got a chance. They need Ferencváros to lose. They need to win against Kukaliki. Ferencváros got quite lucky in their last game. But yeah, it's going to be a tough ask for Genk to qualify, especially as those two clubs above them could just draw and it'd be fine. This game, however, was anything but uneventful or unexciting. Tarik Tissou Dali gave Genk the lead in the 12th minute. Yurusor then got his first of the game in the 21st minute. Nice finish from him. He then got his second poor kind of mix-up between Kandus. Well, actually, to be fair, the first one was really poor goalkeeper from Davey Roof coming from a corner, not getting it at all, saw tucking it in. Kandus was then the culprit for the second one. He just went down far too softly. Ian Hine was like, you can't go down like that there. He's like, in other parts of the pitch, you'd probably get the free kick. He's like, but in the centre of the goal, you just can't risk it. He risked it, saw, got the ball, ran through, ran the keeper, made it 2-1 to Genk. Then late in the game, poor Tolu Oakadare, I believe it was, had to go off with a head injury. Unfortunately, at that point, Genk had made all their substitutions. And in Belgium, they don't have it like they have in other countries where with a head injury, you get kind of an extra substitution. This has now started the debate around that, which is good. Cause I think it should be a thing because we need to protect the players. And if they know they're not going to be able to get the substitution, it's kind of like there's an incentive to keep them on. And that's really, really dangerous. Whereas if you're caring about the players and their well-being, you say you can take you off and we get someone else to come on. So then there's no pressure at all on the player to continue. There's no pressure from like physios or anything like that to make a wrong decision to help the team. Unfortunately, yeah, Genk then did equalise. Tarik Tissou Dali off the hip. If anyone's seen the film El Dorado, they play that kind of weird ball game where they're like hipping this like ball through a hoop. It was very similar to that. He has like used his little hip flex to like kind of to tuck it in. Finishes to all, guess a result that on paper, given kind of the timings of all the goals, would be better for Genk. Genk just more frustrated. Joris was obviously very, very frustrated with the result from this one. Just yeah, they just need to be able to hang on to these leads at the end of the game. But I think the context around it with being a man down through no fault of their own, it's just so unfortunate, and it's something that hopefully will be rectified in the future.
Yeah, I think poor Joris shared some expletives with us. I think that was his response, which is entirely understandable. You mentioned Tarik Tissou Dali, actually, and he's pretty much back to, you know, the level that we know he can get to. You know, he's got 6 and 15 domestically now with 2 assists, and in Europe, 5 and 11 with 4 assists. So that's 11 and 26 altogether this season with 6 assists. And we're only halfway through the season. So if he can replicate that, then, you know, he's well on course to having another brilliant season, which is what we expected, I suppose, and what we hope for, because we know how good a player he is. But yeah, you allow him the room that he got in this game, and he will definitely hurt you because he's too good not to. Again, undefeated in 9 across all competitions now, 6 wins in there, pretty good. They've been steamrolling along kind of quite nicely. January's looming in the horizon. We say this every week, it's the great unknown. Just going to throw that in there again. They've had a pretty wild week, Genk, really. Obviously, the Paul Nardi situation in Europe, which kind of horrified everybody. Nobody wants to go back and replay that moment, because you could see it and you could kind of hear it. And big Hein van Heijs Eisenbrook actually saying afterwards that he's never encountered anything like that in the game. You know, an open fracture like that with no contact is extremely unusual. I remember several years ago something very similar happening to Henrik Larsson when he was at Celtic in Europe. Celtic were playing Bordeaux and there was no contact and Henrik Larsson's tibia just went. And I can still see that in my mind's eye, and it's not nice. He's had surgery. Paul's had his surgery quite quickly, I think. University of Ghent Hospital doing their thing there, and has started his recovery already. And it was really, really nice this week, over the last few days, to see some of the other clubs in the Pro League, people like Miro Muzlic kind of coming out and wishing him well as well in a press conference and addressing that really directly. That's really, really nice to see. But yeah, you know, decent performance from Ghent. I thought Genk, on the other hand, probably should have won this game. Wout of Rankin was a wee bit frustrated. He said that they lacked courage, and maybe that lacking a little bit of courage is what, you know, caused them not to get it over the line. It's actually been a really bad week for Genk, if you think about it, because, you know, they concede that 99th minute equaliser to Tisa Daly. They lose late on in Florence to Fiorentina in Europe during the week. And then the previous week, obviously, they lose to Standard in a game that was actually very close. And looking at the numbers now, you know, Genk have only won 6-16 domestically, which is pretty poor. And you've got to ask, is that really good enough?
Ooh, sowing some seeds. No, I think, yeah, I think you're right. I think that Frank and Joris would probably have said this, but maybe I don't want to completely misquote him, but the way this, the kind of lineup he went with is maybe a kind of indication to De Kon, like, let this, I need some more for this squad if you want me to compete, the way he basically started Yurisaw up front over Zakiri and Tolu. It's like he's not got the confidence in these strikers. It's just a shame they didn't get Paul Onuachi back. I think everything would probably look a little bit different with Big Paul, but it is what it is. But yeah, no, you're right. On TC Daly, him coming back to form is great. Hopefully a call-up to the Morocco squad. Probably not a hope for Ghent. They probably would be happy with him not getting called up, but he was there and he probably would have gone to the World Cup. So I think it'd be a shame for him not to be there. Especially when they have a chance to win it for only like the second time in their history. So that could be quite a good moment for him. But again, yeah, they could lose a few players to the African Cup of Nations and Asian Cups and all that stuff coming up. So yeah, they need to bank some points as quickly as they can. Speaking of Asian Cups and Asian players, let's go to Mechelen against St. Truiden. St. Truiden playing the, I don't know what to call it, the kind of, you're playing chess when they're playing checkers sort of thing. They see it snowing, they come out in the white kit, which must have been, well, I don't know, it seemed very well planned. But I'm also like, Mechelen were defending them as if they couldn't see them to start the game. It was that bad from Mechelen's defence. They're pretty woeful. St. Truiden get an early free kick in around about the fourth minute. Koita's initial shot hits the wall. His second shot goes straight into the back of the net. 11 goals for Abubakari Koita. It's just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous this season. And yeah, I think St. Truiden are going to be praying that Mauritania get knocked out instantly in the African Cup of Nations come January, because yeah, they need him to miss as few games as possible. He's then the architect for the second goal in the 42nd minute. He just picks it up and he's like, I've got freedom. Torsten Finks told me I can do what I want, so I'm going to do what I want. I'm just going to run with it. And he runs past about four players. The best attempt to tackle for me was Fulan, who just slides straight past him. Like, he just goes around and Koita doesn't even, he just like watches him go past, takes his next touch. Like, he kind of almost stops, watches him go. His shot hits the post. He deserves a score, but it comes out to Ito. Ito tucks it in to make it 2-0 to St. Truiden. As he starts ringing the changes at half-time, Lauerbach's back, so he chucks him on. Malede, who helped last time out, he comes on as well. Van der Berg and Rabti go off, but it doesn't really change anything for Mechelen. They finish with next year of 0.35, which is pretty horrific. Especially at home when you expect them to be so much better. They had more ball than St Truiden, which is rare this season because usually St Truiden dominate that side of things. But it wasn't to be for Mechelen. St Truiden gets a well-deserved win. They're just... Every time they win, it just feels like a massive 3 points because I still expect them at some point to just drop into kind of near that relegation battle. But they're now, 7 points clear, still playing lovely football, and being able to do it without a main striker is just when Keuter goes, will someone step up? Like they could do. Like there's no reason to say someone wouldn't step up and kind of take the mantle from him when he is gone for a bit. But I think the biggest fear for them is either an extended Mauritanian run or just an injury to Keuter while he's there. I think teams are always when players get injured on international duty, there's more frustration if they get injured with them. Like there's always that kind of that bugbear. But 11 goals, fantastic, fantastic season from Keuter, and long may it continue. It's great to see.
Yeah, his form is seriously peaking at the right point for him as well. A bit like Tisa Daly. Anyone would have thought, as you were saying, there was a big. National tournament on the horizon. I think the big question with St Truiden, and we've been asking this for months now, is what they're going to do in January. We know that they failed to really kind of add any depth or quality to the striking department. So it's just as well Keuter has been having a good season because that's been the real issue for them up till now and is the one that everyone's still looking at what they're going to do about. Looking at their fixture run up till Christmas, though, I mean, they'll be looking at thinking, okay, we can rack some points up here before those tournaments start. They've got Leuven at home, Molenbeek away, and Charleroi at home. So I think they will fancy a few points in there, especially the way that they've been playing. They've got nothing to fear from those three fixtures. Really worthy winners this weekend. I thought they played pretty confident, direct, one-touch football that Mechelen really, really struggled to cope with. They started badly. They lost the early goal, and it kind of went downhill from there, really. Obviously, the weather didn't help. Bit of a double-edged sword, this, really, for them, because they go in, they're 2-0 down before the weather starts to get pretty bad, and then, it's difficult to get back into the game after that with the best will in the world. And they were a little bit better in the second half, but didn't really create too much. I thought they were really pedestrian, Mechelen, and it was rather strange to hear Besnik Hasi come out afterwards and say that he couldn't fault the effort of his players, because there was a few thousand Mechelen fans in that stadium who I don't think would agree with him, who were obviously watching a kind of completely different game, a little bit of reverse psychology going on there, the new manager not wanting to be too critical too early, which was really strange as well, because I noticed that he looked really, really irritable on the touchline during this game for obvious reasons. You could see how poorly his side were playing, and I think he was giving a few players a bit of stick as well. So to kind of come out and say, we didn't play too badly in the end was a really, really strange approach to take, I thought. But yeah, they definitely didn't deserve anything out of it. They've got a tricky run of fixtures coming up as well. They've got Club Brugge at home, Union away, Standard at home, and then Charleroi and Ghent both away. So three of those five around the next month or so are kind of quite tricky. And I think the last thing they can afford to do is relax too much, having come off the back of a couple of wins, which changed the complexion of things for them as well. And I just had a feeling that maybe that was what happened this weekend.
Yeah, I think everyone seems to kind of underestimate St Truiden, and he just, turned up and played them apart, took them apart, really. And for Mechelen, Urpen are only 3 points behind them. There's kind of you feel like that 10 to 16 are now all kind of in it for that relegation battle. You presume Standard are going to kind of in ninth with 20 points. You presume they should have enough quality to rack up enough points. But for Mechelen, Molenbeek, Charleroi, Erpen, Leuven, Vesta and Kortrijk, you're all involved now.
It's a proper concertina, isn't it? You need to keep picking up points. Speaking of you mentioned St Truiden's white strip in the store. The St Truiden's merchandise manager today confirmed that that's a one-off. They were only going to wear it for this weekend. Not only is it a one-off, but they will be match-worn auction shortly. So if you want one of those unique snow shirts, you'll be able to get one soon. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
they're just, everyone's going to hate them, aren't they? Like the pitch, everyone hates their pitch, and now they're going to be like, oh, they're playing in camouflage kits. That is going to be their new thing.
Rob Spiess had a little pop after the game as well. He said he wasn't too impressed to see them come out with a white kit. And this was before the snow actually started on the game. So it went downhill quickly.
Especially when you're wearing a bright kind of orangey, red and yellowy kind of kit as well that everyone can see. St. Jude, Mechelen sticking out like a sore thumb and St. Jude blending in. I think my thing with them is the ownership, in my opinion, should be looking at this season, seeing what's been achieved on a shoestring budget and being like, right, let's back him. Like, we'd have to spend loads, but let's try and back him as much as we can because there's something good happening here. That fan base, like, if it's good, they'll turn up. They turned up, they watched Bernd Hollerback football, and even when that was dreary, but going, like, results-wise was good, they turned up. So if they're playing good football, they're going to turn up, especially with the young players. Like, the young players have been great. It's just adding, like, a little bit around them is all they need to do. I'd still be fascinated to see what Gianni Bruno would have done in this squad. I think it would have been so interesting. He could have scored an absolute bucket load. But I think he's doing pretty well in Turkey from what I've seen on the numbers, so fair play to him. You mentioned Mechelen have Club Brugge coming up, Scott. They are in good form this week. They absolutely demolished Besiktas away from home. 5-0. Nielsen, Thiago scoring twice, Onyedika and Skov Olsen all getting on the score sheet. They are through to the next round of the Conference League. And in some flipping style as well, I have to say that was a really, really impressive performance. It's one of those classic football cliches, isn't it? Like, Turkey's a tough place to go, but Besiktas have been absolutely woeful in that group. They have been by far and away the worst team in that group. It's just been horrific. So it's pretty much, yeah, Bruges and Bode Glimt going through Lugano and Besiktas out. So, yeah, fair play to club. And I think it's a trophy they should really take seriously. I think it'd be good to see them really go for it because they've got the strength and depth going forward to really go for it. So fingers crossed they can do something special in the Conference League this season. Rodriguez continued his scoring run. Rodriguez or Thiago, however you want to give him his name. Literally within 3 minutes against Standard Liège, he had opened the scoring. And then who else was going to score the second goal but Philipp Zinckernagel, Standard's favourite player at the moment. He got an assist as well in this game for the goal from Rodriguez. Finished 2-0. Standard, they huffed and puffed, I guess you could kind of say. But they never really looked like troubling club in this one. Which is fair play to the club defence. That's two clean sheets in the space of a week. Like, can't argue with that at the moment, especially as they've come in for a lot of criticism. Obviously, they got the clean sheet against Circle as well. So it's three on the bounce in the space of a couple of days. Moves them into the top six. And we were talking before when we just got about people, like teams that we think are kind of going to be the biggest challenges for the league this season now that we've seen 16 games. And even though they've struggled, you always have to kind of count them in. Because they've just got that know-how, and it feels like when the Jan Breidel kind of gets behind them and there gets a bit of momentum, it can be very hard to stop. So, yeah, good performance from them. Carl Hufkens was pretty pissed off after the game, like, about the lack of kind of quality performance from his side. I think, obviously, personally, he wanted to go there and do well. That would have meant a lot to him, but alas, it wasn't to be. And the FS Standard, it kind of stopped their little run towards the top six, which they've been going on since the transfer window closed. And I think from kind of the outside looking in again, sort of saying, I think they're probably going to finish in that mid-table slot unless they do some crazy things in January. But that depends on 777 having any money, which if you know anything about the stories rumbling around there, it could be an interesting kind of next couple of months for Standard and the rest of the clubs in that kind of company portfolio.
Yeah, club deserved winners. They started this game really, really strongly. Ronnie Dyla had them really up for it. They came flying out of the traps, get the early goal, which, you know, just kind of cemented the momentum from their point of view, because Standard started really, really slowly. Goal aside, they had a really, really poor start, and it's always difficult to kind of work your way back into a game when you start poorly. Club, as I was saying, kind of controlling the entire game, actually, and even later on in the game when Standard had a bit more of the ball, it was only really because Club allowed them to have it, because the kind of the game was gone. Interestingly, Club are looking a lot better defensively, and isn't it strange how the simplest of little tweaks almost might be the thing that is the answer to the solidity issues? Brandon Mekela and Jorn Spilliers playing together, but Mekela being moved over to the left of centre because he's naturally left-footed, seems to be at the root of the improvement recently. They're undefeated in five now, if you include their European games. And of those five games, they haven't conceded. So for a side that went, you know, into double figures in terms of number of games conceding at least one, they've now gone five without conceding. And that's, you know, coinciding with that little defensive tweak with Mekela and Spilliers as well. So that seems to be working. And they've both been discussing this week, Brandon Mekela and Jorn Spilliers, saying that they feel there's something in this. They don't know what it is, but, you know, they feel better. And Mekela's obviously stronger on the left side naturally because he is left-footed. That's his preference. So they've hit upon something. And I'd be curious to know from Ronnie whether that was deliberate or whether that's purely by accident, you know, because it's strange the way that these things work. But Club are up to fifth now. They'll be feeling a lot better about themselves. And Ronnie Dyla said recently that they had a plan to just, you know, get a few wins under their belt before the end of the year. And then he kind of hinted that, you know, they were hoping to go on a major run after the winter break. But they're starting to kind of slowly kind of come into much stronger kind of contention now. And as you were saying, Ben, because of those recent results, you know, you can never really kind of count them out because of the quality and strength of depth that's in that side. Standard, on the other hand, continue to struggle away. Their away form is pretty poor. 8 out of a possible 24 points away this season isn't really good enough, obviously. Their last away win, actually, was at the end of September. I checked this today. It was against Leuven at the Den Dreef in September, which feels like an age ago now. And they just kind of... same thing every week. You know, it's the consistent inconsistency that they yet are struggling to find any solution to. Carl Hopkins will be very frustrated that they didn't really compete too much. There was a lot of players running into one another to have some impact this weekend in this game, because there certainly wasn't anything created by Standard. And yeah, he looked an isolated, frustrated figure. Ronnie Dyla, on the other hand, delighted to win this game, obviously, and wipe away the memory of the defeat in the reverse fixture a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I think you've pretty much nailed that. And now, interesting about the defensive switch as well. That is quite interesting, because I've always felt with Spilliers, he just looked a bit... it kind of makes more sense now, like that he wasn't comfortable, because he'd make weird decisions that just didn't make much sense. And I think it was one of those things where it's like Dyla either had to stick with him, and he decided that he's just going to roll with this, and it's gonna work out for the long run. It's kind of like, I guess you kind of compare it to kind of like in the NBA when you get like a high draft pick that you're like, this player's going to be good, but we're going to have teething problems, and we're going to maybe lose some games that we shouldn't lose. But in like a year's time, this player's going to be so much better that it's going to make such a difference. I think it can speed up with football quicker than it can with basketball in terms of how quickly you can adapt and like move through. And it's good for Belgian football if like a player like Spilliers can really, really come and develop as another defender to add to the mix of good quality defenders. So fingers crossed for him, he'll continue to develop. But I think they do kind of need to get some more cover in that position anyway, come January. They're kind of like Anderlecht, and they'll probably be shopping for similar people. Interesting to see if they go for a striker now, though, that Rodriguez is scoring again. Juk obviously scored the other day as well. So, yeah, interesting to see if this changes anything in terms of their transfer strategy going forward. One side that they should probably all be calling to get a striker off, Union. They hosted Cercle Bruges. Miron Muzlic, as we've said, he's signed a new contract today. We kind of knew it was happening. It was just kind of waiting for that final kind of get him to sign on the dotted line through to 2025. it's a no-brainer, isn't it? I mean, it just makes complete and utter sense. I was listening to the Zweite Bundesliga podcast with Matt Caragucci. If you haven't listened to it, definitely give it a listen. It's a great podcast. And he had, I think it's Seb, who does the Bundesliga stuff in The Athletic. And he was saying something that I think we probably feel quite a bit is, when you meet some people in football, you get quite defensive over them. You get kind of attached to them. And you kind of, you like, if you like them and you've had a positive like chat with them, you kind of always want them to do well. And we've always like felt that about Miron, like when we met him briefly for the Circle Bridge, when we were in Circle Bridge meeting Carlos, which obviously again with Carlos as well, we met Carlos and he's always been really, really forthcoming with us and open with us. And then, yeah, meeting Miron, we were like, yeah, he just seems like a really, really nice guy. And it kind of does come across on the pitch, I think, as well, doesn't it? With the way the players are playing, the way that team has cohesion, I think he's clearly a big part of that. And Carlos always, oh, he's always like five steps ahead, isn't he? Like he's always thinking a few steps ahead. And with Milne, his thought was when they brought him in was always that he would become the head coach. And that's what he told us. So we obviously will just believe what he said at face value. But you can kind of see why. Like it just has made sense. So I think it's a good move for both. For us as kind of fans of Belgian football, for this to keep going, that he hasn't gone anywhere else. I don't think he'll be at Circle forever. I think if he continues this success, he's going to get snapped up because he's clearly a very, very good coach. And before this one, before the game with Union, he said he promised us a goal fest as well. He's like two teams that like to score goals. We had a couple of goals. Wouldn't call it a goal fest. I was hoping it'd be the highest scoring game of the weekend, but it wasn't quite like that. Union did take the lead. Who else but Mohamed Amorla? Ball over the top. He runs through, puts it past Varlason, who doesn't really have a chance to make it 1-0. Gustav Nielsen then converts to make it 2-0 in the 31st minute. But Circular aren't just going to roll over and take that. Set piece comes in, eventually finds its way to Kevin Denke. Lovely finish from Kevin Denke. He's also now on 11 goals for the season with a Abubakari Koita. Yeah, I think the Kevin Denke kind of rise as well is another testament to what they've done at Circle. Lose Ueda, but Kevin Denke then goes on a run and scores some goals. Union thought they had made it 3-1 in the second half, but the goal was ruled out for quite a tight looking offside. Circle were pushing, but Maurice made a couple of decent saves. And yeah, unfortunately for them, they weren't able to get back into it on a very, very cold cold night in Brussels. It was so cold that at half time the two sets of fans had a nice little snowball fight, which I thought was quite funny to watch, just seeing them launching snowballs at each other from either side. If you've been to the stadium, to the Union Stadium, you'll know that because it's in the forest as well, it's quite a fun place to go, and when it snows it kind of is quite atmospheric and it's quite a cool thing. We had another bottle being kicked over, Scott. This time it's Mohamed Amorla after getting substituted. Bless him was asked about it and he said I'd have probably done the same. So I think that's like great win for Union, but coming out of this, obviously with Muslitz getting that new contract and then how Bless him is a new Union, I feel like they're very similar in the sense of like they really focus on that team cohesion, the team chemistry, the man management side of these two head coaches, which we saw with Bless him in Oostende. That was one of his big sins. We see him in Miron since he's been there. Like that whole club ethos is about that kind of man management, player valuing people, the players as humans and stuff like that. I think that's been really big. And I think Union has felt like they do that as well. We know what Alex is like at the top. Like he's very much a people person. So two kind of a game that we were quite looking forward to seeing with these two clubs playing good football. Nice kind of two good young managers to watch as well. But for Union, I think Scott, you've got some stats and since they've been back, it's just been ridiculous. And I think, is this finally going to be the year? Like, don't want to curse them, but it feels like everything they're doing is touching gold at the moment.
Yeah, well, you mentioned, how good these sides are, and we expected this game to be fiercely competitive, which it was, and actually it was kind of quite close, you know. Three goals in a six-minute spell was what we got. Kevin Denke's finish, by the way, fantastic. I was raving about the quality of some of the finishes last week. Whew, big Kev, you know what I mean? He really knows how to finish sometimes. I mean, that was a fabulous finish. I actually, you were talking about talking to Circle earlier on. I was in contact with the club a little bit today around the Miron Muzlic thing, and they are absolutely delighted to get this confirmed. I can tell you that much. They really are pleased, as they should, because there was a lot of interest. There was interest from Italy, Germany, and Austria as well. So to tie him down for at least another year anyway is massive for them, you know, and just again is testament to kind of the project that they have there and the principles that they have in place and how important he is to that. So the longer they hold on to him, the better, and they know that. You're right, the time will come where his success will see him moving, but I think he feels personally that time isn't at the moment, and he's I think he's right about that. I think, you know, there is still work to be done there, because as we know, the Circle have the youngest squad in Belgium, which means that arguably the best is yet to come, and there are a lot of young players there who people should be kind of quite excited about because they have huge potential. Good game this, actually, and actually as a fixture, I've said this before, I think Union against Circle is one of the big fixtures for me in the Belgian football calendar now. Certainly over the last couple of years, these sides are both really good to watch in my view, and seeing them play each other, I think always you know, offers up something worth watching, and you know, this weekend was no different. You mentioned, Ben, me having some stats about Union. I'd been thinking about their you know, them being consistency terminators, that's the phrase I'm going to use, over the last few years, without looking closely at the numbers. And today I was looking closely at the numbers, so I went away and had a look at how they've been doing over the course of the regular season. So this is, set aside the playoffs for the minute, since Union came back up to the Pro League in 2021-22, they have, over the course of the regular season, if you take into account the 16 weeks that we've had so far this season, there have been 84 regular games. Union have won 59 of those and have only lost 12 league games across the regular season over the last three seasons. Those numbers are unbelievable. You know, and people just don't give them enough credit. I mean, you know, they kind of do without knowing the numbers. So I wanted to pull out the numbers today, and I think they're incredible. And this is, you know, this is with a huge turnover in playing staff this summer, particularly, you know, and a change in managers. And we don't need to rave about how they keep the bandwagon rolling, because they've, you know, they've proven that they can do that, and they've definitely done it again this year. But those numbers, 59 wins and 84 across the regular season so far over the last 3 years, are unbelievable numbers. And you know, they're really well placed now to go on and challenge for the title again. We know that they haven't had the best playoffs in over the last couple of years, and that's what's kind of let them down in terms of winning the title. But in terms of general consistency, they've been by far and away the best side in Belgium, and nobody can take that away from them.
No, absolutely not. It's just, it is remarkable what they've done. And yeah, you said Mazu's been there, Gelats, and now Blessing. Like, it's three different managers, Undav scoring the goals, then you had Boniface, and now you've got Amuro, but you've also got Nielsen. You've got Eckhart. Rodriguez is starting to look pretty good as well. I can see some similarities between him and Boniface in terms of kind of dribbling ability and stuff like that, being willing to take the man on despite being absolutely massive at the same time. Just no hard thing. It's quite a hard thing to do when you're that size, but you can dribble around people. It's terrifying. So yeah, and then you just look at Puertas, from Tuma to Puertas, replacing Kasper Nielsen. Like, it has just been ridiculous. And the similarities with Brighton will always be there because of the kind of links between the clubs. But I think it's a different level because of the sense that Union go into every season knowing that at the end of the season, they will probably lose their key players. Like, they know that at the beginning of the season. So it's like, they want to obviously ride that success, but then they've got a plan for the next season before that. And that's what they do. They plan way ahead. And like Amura coming in, he is the Dante Vanzé replacement. Like, it's so obvious what he is in terms of how they look at players and stuff like that. And we, like, if people are really interested in that, have missed the episode, definitely look back through our archives for the chat we had with Alex about the Union kind of approach and strategy. And this is back when they had Mazu, and nothing's really changed. That approach is still there. So I definitely recommend, if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen, because it is a fascinating thing to talk to them about. And it's just being vindicated on the pitch at the moment. Like, it's, I think what I find is they'll sign, the way they sign players is so interesting as well, in the sense that they sign those players that they probably know are going to leave after a season, but then they kind of back up those guys with a couple of players that they think, yeah, these guys are going to be kind of like Belgian Pro League stalwarts for quite a while. Yeah. People like, you've obviously got Christian Burgess. They're like, well, he's probably not going to leave, because this is the best he's probably ever had it as a footballer.
That's a really good point, Ben, because see, when you look at somebody like Cameron Puertas, who's having a really good season as well and has really stepped into that kind of Teddy Toomer type role in terms of his presence in the squad and you know, that the cohesion that he brings between, you know, the midfield and the front line. You know, last season, it wouldn't have been unkind to have described him as a bit of a bit part player, to be honest. But this season, because he's had the experience of last year there, you know, he's had that time to kind of bed in to the team and to Belgian culture and really hit the ground running this year. And, you know, he's really, you know, returning that patience now. And he's the perfect example of that sort of thing, where, you know, a player comes in who they might not expect to necessarily have an immediate impact, but they know the player who's ahead of them, who will leave in due course, who, you know, they know the hole that that player's going to fit. And it's incredibly smart recruitment. They're 10 undefeated now, which is a great run. And Amura as well, he's got 9 and 11 domestically, and is definitely up to now one of the players of the season.
Yeah, which is crazy as well, because he wasn't there to start the season. That Dennis Eckert was, again, another one they signed last year who didn't really do much last season. On Puertas, though, I hate to be that kind of person that's like, yeah, well, I knew about that. But it was just every time I watched him, I was like, this kid's good. Like, there was something about him. But I know what you mean. He's just come off the bench, have a little bit of an impact, but never start a game. And I was just like, yeah, this guy's going to be good. And he has. And that doesn't always happen. Like, how many times have we seen players that were all kind of like, yeah, he's going to be good, and then he's not? But with Puertas, it just definitely has. And I think another player, Koke Makeda, they signed last season, didn't play many games. Het Nieuwsblad are saying Tottenham want to sign him for six, and Union are like, well, we'll take €16 million then. It's just, that is just like, he's played more games this season than he did last season.
That's the other aspect to their transfer business as well, Ben. When players do go, they get great fees in. And when you bear in mind that they have one of the smallest operating budgets across the Pro League, that puts all of their success into an even wider context that is just as remarkable.
Yeah, and you know that Makeda could leave in January. They've got Ross Sykes, the goal-scoring central defender that he is. Yeah. One area they might be a little bit disappointed in, just to put a little bit of a downer on it, is the Europa League. 0-0 draw with Toulouse in the week. Means they are sitting in third place, but they have to play Liverpool in the final game. Got to hope that I feel like the best thing that could happen is finishing third. Union won't say this. They want to finish second. They want to stay in the Europa League because they're an ambitious club. But finish third, get into the Conference League. And I think, again, them, Club Brugge, Ghent, if they want to, like, you could really have a good go at it, really have a good stab at it. Because, like, we saw some teams last year going all the way, a couple of the Dutch sides that went quite far. And it's like, well, they were no better than some of these Belgian sides. And obviously we're biased and we think these Belgian sides are great. But for Union as well, it'd be interesting to see if they went into the Conference League, like how they'd approach it and stuff like that. But they could really push for it. Just it would depend if it started to weigh down on their title ambitions or anything like that. We're speaking quite lofty at the moment, so let's kind of drop down a little bit into the Challenger Pro League with some sides that would love to repeat what Union have done, what Cercle have done, what some other clubs have done. An interesting weekend, wasn't it, Scott? Like, a bit more moving and shaking, a couple of teams dropping points you didn't expect. And there's one side that just looked like they're kind of marching towards a title that we just didn't expect.
Yeah, it's always interesting down there in the Challenger Pro League. And, you know, we never miss an opportunity to remind everybody of that here. We've reached match day 14, score roundup. Lommel lost 1-0 at home to Yong Genk in a slightly surprising result. That's the second week in a row that Lommel have actually lost a local Limburg derby, so a lot of Lommel fans none too pleased at the moment. Patro Eisden lost 2-0 at home to Beerschot. SL16 couldn't win their third game in the bounce. They lost 3-1 at home to Zlata Waregem, who had to come from behind to do it this weekend. Anderlecht Futures lost 2-0 against Beveren. Denza lost 3-1 to Club Next, and Oostend lost 1-0 to Liers. RFC Liège won 2-1 against Sarang, and in the final game of the weekend, didn't actually get started because it got postponed because of the weather. Dender against Franck-Baron was postponed, and I think is now due to be played over the next couple of days, I think. So it will be played before we're with you next. In terms of the bigger picture, it means Beerschot remain top. They're in a really good run of form at the moment, 6 wins in their last 7. They now have the best defence. It's founded on that. Obviously, that's the base of all of their good work. And they're in a really strong run at the moment. Zlata are second. Had to come from behind, as I was saying, to win this weekend. Lommel, who I mentioned, who started really, really well, they've now dropped down to 6th and are just still in the playoff contention at the moment. They're now winless in 6. A poor run of form for them at the moment, which they will hope changes soon, because they were going really well up until recently. Beveren's decent form continues. They're up to 8th. They are undefeated in 6 now with 4 wins. Beveren attacker Anthony Limbombe, incidentally, one of the men of the moment in the Challenger Pro League, he got a couple again this weekend to add to his couple last weekend, so he's got 4-2 now. So Wim de Decker will be hoping that he can kind of continue that. Top scorer remains Adriano Bertaccini at RFC Liège, and if he wasn't already drawing serious attention from some recruitment departments in the Pro League, I think he will be now, because he's got 11-13. He got another 2 this weekend, and if you've had a chance to have a close look at him, anybody, his movement is really, really good, and he's a great finisher. His second goal this weekend was absolutely fabulous. Long ball over the top, hits it first time while out wide, scores from a really narrow angle. Really, really good player. And RFC Liège will not thank me for saying this, but there'll be a lot of people out to watch him regularly now, because he's doing it consistently and has got a really strong all-round game. So he's going to be receiving a lot of attention, I think.
Yeah, I'm looking at you, St. Truden and Mechelen. Yeah. Especially, I could see him being, because you mentioned, because you see more of him, Scott, you're saying how good his movement is. Mm. Put him in a St. Truden side that will find you if you move. A mobile striker for them could be great. So that'd be interesting. Yeah, looking at the table, I was just thinking, poor Sarang could go back to back in terms of relegations. And not like saying this in a negative way or anything like that, but it'd be interesting to hear from some Beveren fans, like, how you're feeling now, because I know that June, when obviously things were going really badly, you were talking to us, you were kind of telling us about, like, how you're feeling, everything was going. Like, have things changed substantially that you're now happy with the situation or anything like that? We asked last week what Club Bruges fans thought about, like, Hans van Aken and stuff. We got some great responses. It was really nice to kind of, because we're in, like, we're not on the ground all the time. Like, we don't always get to hear what the fans say and stuff like that, and what the fans are thinking. So we really do appreciate when you kind of tell us, like, what fans are thinking. One of the points to point out was Hans van Aken was voted Player of the Month by Club Bruges fans twice in a row. So it was like, that kind of speaks for itself. But it was an interesting discussion to have, especially when they dropped him for the Conference League game and won 5-0. I was like, maybe there's something in this. But then he played against Standard Liège, had a decent game, and they won 2-0. So, yeah, all in all, inconclusive evidence, I guess we could say about that one. But yeah, no, interesting. It is really interesting as well. You mentioned Beerschot being top, built on a great defence, because that is the complete opposite of the Beerschot we saw a couple of seasons ago when they were in the Pro League. The Stardust team, they didn't defend. The defenders they had didn't defend. Whereas now, and they've still got a couple of them there. I think, is it Konstantinopoulos, the young Greek defender? I think he's still there. He's the only one that survived the defensive culls of that old team. But yeah, no, it is interesting. It'll be interesting to see as well if anyone tries to dig out like a Zeno Garner or anything like that in January. Players at that, like, or Jelavossen, just if you're really, really desperate to stay up and you just think, we know these guys can score goals, will Zalta budge at all if we try and come in for them? So yeah, that could change everything. And yeah, finally, I guess, yeah, you're right, Lommel Lon was really interesting that they're winless in six, but they're still up there. Like, that's how good their early season form was. So I think they can take some kind of confidence in that, thinking if this is just a blip and we rise back up the other side of it, we banked enough points in the early start of the season, we can really kind of have another like flash at it. But I think, yeah, Bierce got a kind of the surprise package out of nowhere with limited funds and an owner that wants to sell them. And this is the way to do it. Get top of the league, because then people might be a little bit more interested in buying your club. Yeah, I think that is probably it for this weekend. There is Belgian Cup action this week. We'll go through that next week when we know kind of the results of that, if there's been any cup upsets. I guess the one that you're probably looking at to be a major upset would be if Nokke can beat Leuven. Then you've also got Beveren against Union as kind of the teams not in the same league. Oh, Oostende against Genk. Sorry, I forgot about that one as well. And Zorta Vagum against Club Brugge. There's loads of them. They're not what I'm talking about. But interesting to see kind of what comes out of those ones, who makes it where, and who's, really targeting the cup this season. Scott, anything to add before we sign out of this one?
I don't think so. I think we've covered it all and more.
Absolutely. Hopefully we'll have Joris back next week. Hopefully he will feel better. There's so many things going around. So yeah, hopefully if you are feeling unwell and you're listening to this, wherever you are, this has made you feel a little bit better for an hour and a bit and taking your mind away from COVID or whatever it is you've got. We'll be back again next week as per usual. If you've got any questions, please do reach out. Any kind of things you want us to touch on next week, any topics or anything like that, especially ahead of kind of January transfer windows or anything like that. We'll obviously do a transfer window roundup at the end of January, as we always do. Rumours starting to circulate already. It's always a fun time of the year to see what ridiculous things people come up with and what ridiculous things actually then turn out to be true. As always, if you like what we do and you've enjoyed this podcast, please just leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. And once again, we will speak to you next week on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.